I want to get into part three on making a part one, part two, because sometimes I will explain part two, part one. The particular part three is very important interpretation. This is a main subject. This is a main subject. More than half of this book is spent explaining the contents of this discourse. So I want to start to study from part three. Interpretation. This is very logical explanation of Buddhism. the part in interpretation, partly interpretation. The part on outline has been given. Next, the part on interpretation will be given. It consists of three chapters: revelation of the true meaning, correction of evil attachment, number three, analysis of the types of aspiration for enlightenment. I give you the diagram. Do you have this? I think you should bring this to have too. So the interpretation is divided into three. A chapter one is revelation of the true meaning. Second, collection of evil attachment. Third, analysis of types of aspiration for enlightenment. Okay, the part on outline has been given. I think this is the page 28, part two outline here. So this is the part on outline has given. Next, the part on interpretation. This is interpretation, right? So chapter one, liberation of true meaning. Liberation of true meaning means chapter. This author tried to explain the meaning of Mahayana teaching. Mahayana means universal dynamic walking. This is Mahayana, not Mahayana opposed to Hinayana. So the title of this book is Awakening of Faith, but strictly speaking, this is the Awakening of Mahayana Faith. Mahayana Faith, not Mahayana in, no, not faith in Mahayana. Mahayana Faith. The original text says Mahayana faith in outlines. So I think here says the awakening of faith. Sometimes in this translation says the awakening of faith in Mahayana. It's not in Mahayana. Mahayana faith. Because faith, must be dynamic working, reaching to limits of phenomena, limits of human knowledge. At that time you can touch the very core of existence. So, that is, at that time it is called dynamic working, okay, truth. So that is revelation, that by revelation of the truth, meaning is they try to explain the real meaning of Mahayana teaching. Okay? Or concretely speaking, particularly in our life, in terms of our life, revelation of the true meaning means what is the real meaning of overall picture of your life. Simply speaking, reality, you say. Real reality. The real reality, you have the overall picture of reality. What is the overall picture of reality you are present in, right, from moment to moment? That is revelation. Revelation of true meaning. Okay? True meaning. So this is the title of chapter 1. Okay? And then this chapter 1 is also divided into two sections. One is the one mind and its two aspects. The mind in terms of the truth. Number one, what mind and its two aspects. The revelation of the true meaning by that the principle of one mind has two aspects. One is the aspect of mind in terms of the absolute, and the other is the aspect of mind in terms of phenomena. Each of these two aspects embraces all states of existence. Why? Because these two aspects are mutually inclusive. What last sentence is translated as in a different way according to D.T. Suzuki. He says, "Both are so closely interrelated that one cannot be separated from the other." Well, anyway, the revelation of the true meaning by that the principle of one mind has two aspects. In this case, the principle means Dharma. Dharma. The Dharma is translated as principle, the principle here in this translation. So Dharma of one mind. And look at the page 28, part 2, and the third paragraph. The principle is the mind of the sentient being. This mind includes in its all states of being of phenomenal world and transcendental world. On the basis of this mind, the meanings of Mahayana may be unfolded. The principle, that in this case also the principle refers to as Dharma. The Dharma is the mind of the sentient being. This mind includes in it all states of being of the phenomenal world and the transcendental world. On the basis of this mind, the meanings of Mahayana may be unfolded. This statement is described in detail in this paragraph I read, One Mind and Two Aspects. So that's why here says the revelation of the true meaning by that principle, the Dharma of the One Mind has two aspects. So from this point, One Mind means Dharma. One Mind is Dharma. Dharma is One Mind. One Mind means universal. Universal entity. Absolute, you can say. Truth, you can say. In our Sanskrit school, our Sanskrit sutra, we say one mind, mind only. Mind only also, this is one mind, same meaning, one mind. The mind, teaching of the one, mind only comes from this, the waking of faith. So this book has a lot of teachings. Zen teaching also here, for this book. Anyway, try to collect essence of the Buddhist teaching anyway. So from this book, anyway, Shin School comes out, Zen comes out from this teaching, our Sanskrit Sutra, and also Buddhist psychology also. So this is kind of this book is kind of what to say. Digest of Buddhist teaching. That's why it is very popular. This book is very popular. So usually one mind is understood as philosophical sense, the absolute in the philosophical sense. But here says one mind, Dharma is the mind of the all sentient beings. So not ontological, philosophical sense. Dharma is not philosophical sense, but that is the mind of the all sentient beings. So that means all of us. So Dharma, or one mind, is the mind of all sentient beings, mind of the core, mind of all of us. So very close. It comes, well, if you understand the one mind, if you understand one mind as a philosophical or psychological, it's kind of idea. But if you understand the one mind as the mind of all sentient beings, it comes very close. That's why in the part two, first of all, it says Dhamma is the mind of sentient beings. This is very important. And also, this one mind is, in a way, unfold Mahayana teaching. So, all Mahayana teaching comes from one mind. That is, whatever you say idealistically, you say truth, or the Buddha nature, or Dhamma nature, or Tathagatagarbha, you know, whatever you say, but it comes from, the Mahayana teaching comes from the mind of all sentient beings. It comes from, that teaching comes from all of you, from your life. That's why he says, the Dhamma is the mind of all sentient beings. So that's why I mentioned all this Buddhist teaching is life, human life. It's not philosophy. It's philosophy because life is very complicated. That's why we have to understand it as best as we can. In order to understand, in order to explain, in order to understand the human life, philosophically, psychologically, well, it's become very complicated. But it's really connected with human life. If you don't understand the philosophical aspect of Buddhist teaching in relation with human life, it's nothing but metaphysical. Metaphysical, philosophical things. Just idea. And I went to a university. Teacher always teaches us, all teachers give a lecture on the Vajanka and the Avasantika Sutras and the emptiness, whatever they taught, always their teaching were really cold. Nothing. Their teaching had nothing to do with our lives. So, when the truth is seen in terms of, phenomenal world, phenomenal, the human substance, the world, phenomenal world of human suffering, in other words, samsaric world. Okay. Truth is called the mind of all sentient beings. All sentient beings. But truth, when the truth is seen from absolute, no delusions, no confusions, etc. It is called, anyway, one mind. Say one mind. So there are many words there, but they all have the same meaning. But the truth is seen from a different angle. That time, truth has different words. Okay. One mind, the mind of all sentient beings, okay. Or Tathagatagarbha means, you have a Buddha nature. Okay. You are already Buddha nature. Okay. This is Tathagatagarbha. You already stored. Garbha means storage. storage. Dhamma container, your body is Dhamma container, garbha. Tathagata means Buddha. The principle, the Dhamma of one mind has two aspects. One is the aspect of mind in terms of the absolute, so-called truth. Okay. One is the aspect of the mind in terms of the absolute. And the other is the aspect of mind in terms of phenomena. So, phenomena and truth. Two aspects. One mind has two aspects. So, in other words, the one piece of paper with two aspects. One is absolute, the absolute or truth, the other is phenomena. And also each of these two aspects embraces all state of existence. Each of these aspects, these two aspects are the absolute and phenomena, embraces the all sentient being. So real reality we live day to day is called one mind in terms of the absolute. So real reality is complete absolute. Complete, no comment. You are there, constantly you are there. Whatever you may go, you make a mistake, you don't make a mistake, crying, laughing, whatever you say, you are doing right in the middle of real reality based on one mind. This is philosophically say, one mind. And then we act. We act, we think, we cry, we suffer, many things. This is phenomenal world. Okay? So phenomenal world, they are always going in the realm of absolute. Nowhere to escape. So that is very important, the outlook on human life, human world. Whatever you think, the quarter, microphone, trees, birds, winters, whatever you think, anyway, all sentient beings exist just like this. So you should have outlook on human life, human world, according to this teaching. That's why he says each of these two aspects embraces all state of existence. Okay. Why? Because these two aspects are mutually inclusive. You can't separate. They are two, but they are not two, they are one. Okay. It's not one. If you say one, it seems to be combined, not combination of the two things. That is a little difficult understanding. But philosophically, intellectually, you can understand it. But no one knows. It is very difficult for us to find a way how to live in that real reality on the basis of interrelated with truth and phenomena. It's pretty difficult. Not only Buddhism, but according to Western philosophy, or many philosophers anyway explain the truth and phenomena. But it's very difficult to find the philosophers to teach us how to live, how to dwell in there constantly, how to act, how to live in peace and harmony. It's pretty hard. But Buddhism anyway constantly teaches us that point. So that's why from this point, Buddhism is not, the goal of the Buddhism is not to understanding the meaning of liberation or experience of liberation. It's not a final goal. Final goal is the understanding of liberation, experience of liberation, but you have to have deep compassion to help all sentient beings on the basis of liberation. Okay, this is called liberation. You have to help. So that, because if you become a liberation, very naturally you can help. This is real liberation. But if you don't help all sentient beings, even though you understand, even though you experience liberations, it doesn't make sense. So final goal of Buddhism is anyway understanding, experiencing, anyway liberation, but you have to. You have to put it into practice too, in order to help all sentient beings. That is the final goal. So finally, right in the middle of practicing of helping, practice of helping all sentient beings, completely no idea of, no perception of liberation. You should forget it. You have to be free from liberations. Then you can help. So that's why always there is a negative expression there. No help, no liberations. Okay? That is called Nirvana. We say Nirvana. Nirvana is final liberation, complete final liberation. So enlightenment. Enlightenment, the Nirvana is according to the universe. It's in Nirvana is kind of black hole, you know. Enlightenment, delusions, you know, sufferings and the pleasures, all stuff are complete suffering and disappear. Nevertheless, you are really work there. Okay? But if you experience Nirvana, if you think something like that, the people scared. Because if you think black hole, if I say Nirvana is black hole, you scared. You are afraid of that. But in terms of speech life, I don't think you disappear. You appear inconspicuously more than before, very clearly. Your consciousness works very clearly, and you can act very clearly, stably. Okay. But no perceptions, no perception, no ideas. Your everyday life really working. Okay. So, that's why, because these two aspects are mutually inclusive. Okay. So, I think in order to understand human world, human beings, you should keep in mind this point. Phenomena and truth are interacted, interpenetrated. interpenetrated, interdependent, constant. So that is totally, as a whole, we say dynamic walking. Okay? Dynamic walking. Kind of a statue of the Buddha made by gold. Okay? And you say, if you see this statue, maybe you say that gold. Okay? Yes, it's gold. Gold. From the other, someone says it's Buddha statue, because it's a Buddha statue. Whatever you say, it hits the mark, because it's a Buddha statue. But on the other hand, it is a gold. So even though you say gold, it's right, because Buddha is, Buddha statue is made by gold. So whatever part of the Buddha statue is taken by you is gold. But without gold, you cannot make that Buddha statue. The Buddha statue is a phenomenal world. But gold is, anyway, truth. Us, one mind. The mind of all sentient beings. Your basic nature is exactly gold. And then that gold and Buddha statue are exactly one. You can't separate it. So without gold, without the absolute or the mind of all sentient beings, without Buddha nature, without truth, you cannot exist. Just like Roger, just like Karagiri, no, just like Teru. This is very important point. If you try to understand the people and things, material beings, whatever it is, in appropriate way, you should keep in mind this one. Okay? Without the truth, you cannot exist. You cannot take a certain form, so-called Roger, so-called Kagi, so-called Teo. You cannot think it. You cannot exist. It's impossible. That's why this book always mentions this point. And also, two aspects are mutually inclusive. But temporarily I can say so like this. Well, limits of suffering, limits of phenomena, okay? Limits of knowledge, limits of pleasure, whatever you say. Limits of suffering is the beginning of vastness, the truth, okay? Exactly. The limits of suffering is beginning of vastness or truth. Or one mind, universe. So, limits of the suffering means if you experience suffering through and through, you cannot cry. Sometimes you can bust out laughing. So the limit of suffering is not suffering, complete not suffering. It's something else. So maybe laughing. And the limit of laughter become so suffering? Why? That's it. Because limits of the joy, limit of joy is beginning of vastness. Because end of the limits of end of the joy is completely the extending everywhere. So that is vastness. So you, that is called beginning of the vastness. So called truth. For instance, even though everyone experiences like this, okay? For instance, in the 1960s and 1970s and in San Francisco, lots of things happened, okay? I knew there were a couple of people who were very mental disorders. In a sense, the one man suffered a lot. Well, I don't know if he suffered in appropriate way or not, anyway suffered. And then several times he was in the hospital, coming out, was getting in again, and always back and forth. And he seems to be very sad. Very often he cried. But when he was completely disordered, he became laughter. Completely laughter. He didn't cry. Then that means he already get into a vastness of existence. But point is, he didn't realize vastness or truth. He didn't realize phenomenal world. He didn't realize end of the phenomenal world, end of the suffering, limits of suffering. He didn't realize. That is a point, all right? That's why he says, we should realize this one. When you view human life, human world, according to this teaching, and practice every day on the everyday basis. If you practice like this, very naturally you can realize. Okay? You can realize, you can attain a certain stage of the spiritual life. Okay? That time, end of the suffering, you can cry. You can, end of the suffering, you can cry, but through and through, if you cry, completely cry, turn into laughter. Okay? But even though at that time you are not mental disorder, because you realized, you know pretty well, the relationship between the phenomenal world and the truth. In the Zen stories, the Yaksan Zen master, when the Yaksan Zen master looked at the moon at night, and he became a laughter, great laughter, on the top of the mountains, and that sound, the laughter, anyway, echoed. I don't know how many miles. That story is so weird. Exaggerated. 20 miles and more than 20 miles. Anyway, sound of his laughter, echoed the 20 miles and 40 miles away. Okay? the expression is exaggerated, that means, anyway, the limits of laughter is completely beyond laughing, because it's penetrated. Oh. The limits of suffering is completely past. So you cannot cry. The other day, yesterday, in Alaska, I mentioned about this one, the Miss Universe always cry at the last scene. It's not the very sad experience. It's a very joyful experience. So why don't you laugh? But she doesn't laugh. She always cries at the last scene. And then the student asked me in Alaska, she said, even though she cried, that is a pretty normal, she has some problem. I said, no problem. Even though she cried, no problem. It's very natural, very natural. To get a better life, but on the other hand, you shouldn't commit suicide with your suffering. So you have to take care of the suffering anyway, day by day. And then you can really understand what is the limit of suffering is. And then the limit of suffering is no more suffering. That's why Four Noble Truths, it says, Four Noble Truths of the suffering. And the Buddha says, suffering is due to impermanence. Okay? And egolessness is due to suffering. You know, suffering is due to impermanence. It's very interesting. Impermanence is not change. Idea of change. Impermanence is energies which make the change, which cause change to change, right? That is impermanence. Very basic function of universe. This is temporary, we say impermanence. That's why Dogen then says impermanent is Buddha nature. Okay? So, the impermanence, on account of the impermanence, there is a suffering. So, what is the suffering? So the limits of suffering is impermanence. Impermanence means suffering is not suffering. Why we suffer? Because it is impermanence. Okay? Impermanent. Because it is impermanent, because everything it's very difficult for us to know impermanence, which has no flavors, no smells, no colors, no forms. That's why through the idea of change you can experience in your daily life, we can realize anyway what impermanence is, what basis of change is. What the limits of change is. Limits of change or basis of change is completely nothing. You cannot say it's change. Nothing to change. Just energies. Just moving. So that's why Buddha says, something. On account of impermanence, we have a suffering. But the suffering, basis of the suffering is not suffering. that is impermanent. But in terms of change, that is a suffering. Okay. It's very suffering. But you go through and through into the depths of suffering, it becomes impermanent. Also, say, egolessness is suffering, due to suffering. So, suffering with the practice, on account of suffering, we can practice the egolessness. It's very interesting things. On account of suffering, we can practice egolessness, even though you don't know egolessness. Anyway, take best care of your suffering, okay? Through and through, and then you can touch the core of existence, so-called egolessness, nothing. In touch the core of existence on the basis of impermanence. That's why no ego. That's why suffering gives you lots of information, teachings. Very naturally, through the suffering, you can get taste of what the egolessness is. Very natural. But still there is a difference between the person who don't realize and person who realize. That is a big difference. Okay? That's why we have to practice on a daily basis. And anyway, realize it and understand it, digest it through your body and mind. Otherwise, even the Buddha says, you know, suffering is due to impermanence. You understand it, but even though you don't understand it, it doesn't work in your daily life. Just like a crazy person, you know, laughter. At the end of suffering, they laugh. But even though they laugh, they become a great laughter. It's not a great laughter, just like a Zen Yaksan Zen master. Complete difference. He is a crazy person. So you have to anyway realize. That's why he says anyway, one mind is not a philosophical entity. Anyway, this is mind of all sentient beings, all of us. And this one mind is really something interrelated, interconnected, interdependent with phenomenal world and truth, constantly. There is no gap between. Temporarily, I say end of the phenomena, but there is no end. No end, no beginning. Anyway, constantly working. But temporarily, I can say end of the suffering, or limits of the suffering, limits of the phenomena, limits of knowledge. And then that is the beginning of the universe. Okay? If you come to dead end, that dead end is not dead end, it's beginning anyway. Do you have questions about this?
When you use the term nirvana,
mm-hmm.
Where did this whole notion of nirvana being like some state that is not, you know, like pure activity, undefiled activity, but more a state of being off someplace in this?
The more state of what?
The state of being off someplace in like a heavenly realm. the common understanding of nirvana is sort of like more separated from day-to-day activity in life.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering about that.
Yeah, nirvana is misunderstood by many people anyway, by us. So, because nirvana means to blow out, or extinguish, or temporal, something like this. That's why nirvana refers to as death. Death. Death is life in Buddhism, so nirvana refers to as death is fine. But death is life in the Buddhism, so you should understand nirvana extended into any human life. And the Buddha always, Buddha uses term nirvana as the higher level, higher stage of spiritual life, more than enlightenment or holiness or supernatural power, something like this. Okay? More than this. And then Buddha mentions enlightenment, the supernatural power, or holiness, all things comes into nirvana and melted away. You understand? This is called nirvana. Do you understand? So nirvana is something more than enlightenment. Something more than divine state of the spiritual life. Okay?
You say it's state of no enlightenment?
Yeah, and no enlightenment, you can say
just,
so. Yeah.
Just doing.
Yes. You can say so, no enlightenment. But no enlightenment means experience of enlightenment is melted away in the vastness. So-called truth, one mind. Because always there is a one mind. And everything is melted away. Constantly. You experience suffering this moment, it's melted away. Just like you drop a drip dew. A drop of dew has fallen into the ocean, okay? The moment your drop of dew is fallen into the ocean is every action. Suffering, pressure, you know, this moment, it's melted away, anyway, in the ocean. That is interrelation, interpenetration between, anyway, the truth and phenomenal world. That's what, this is not ideas, this is human life. If you look at the human life, you can really realize this. So suffering is not always suffering. Through the suffering you can really learn how deep human life is. Okay? So that is called nirvana, we say nirvana.
Okay. Why do we call that that state of universal reality? Or whatever you want to call it. Why do we call that state of one mind? Why do we use the term mind rather than like universal energy or any other word we could come up with?
Well, mind, I don't know mind. The, in English, mind is not in Chinese or in Japanese. Mind is a little bit broad. I use a mind, but it's not mind. The term mind I use is the mind including spirit, soul,
okay,
or psych. I don't know. Psych. Or stuff.
But even those are like terms of like human psyche or consciousness.
Yes, the truth or the, you know, if you use the term truth or absolute or the Dharma nature, it's a, that is kind of a philosophical term. But the truth is not the somewhere separate from you. Truth is always with us. Anyway, we are living in the realm of truth, wherever you may go. If so, truth is found in us.
So mind.
And also truth is something. Truth is completely beyond your speculation, but truth is something we should realize. Just like a nature. Do you understand nature? Nature is something far from you. You don't understand real nature. Because if you understand the real nature according to your, what would you say, cognition, okay? You misunderstand nature. So that's why always we destroy the nature anyway. But if so, we shouldn't recognize them. We shouldn't realize the nature. If nature is always far from us, we don't have any chance to understand the nature. Don't you think so? So, nature is something beyond our cognition, but nature should be understood by our cognition. When nature comes into our cognition mind, at that time we say, I understand the nature. But your understanding of nature is already something special. That's why we have to polish. That's why we have to polish, profound our understanding. Okay? So that's where truth is same applied to the truth. Truth is completely beyond your control, your speculation. But if so, we don't have any chance to experience. But practically everyone experiences. Okay? From day to day, so from century after century, so many peoples, many ancestors experience truth. If so, truth is still found in our life. When the truth comes into our life means into our the field of human cognition, means mind. Okay? That time it is called truth. Okay? That's why we use mind. You understand? Alright? So, Buddhism means always there is a something, if you say there is a something which exists, alright? That when you recognize something as an existence, we always understand that something that which exists, okay? In terms of function of the cognition. Without function of cognition, we cannot recognize anything. We cannot say Roger exists. Okay? What I say, if I say Roger exists there, that means already there is a communication in terms of cognition. Okay? You understand? So, not ontological existence.
Right. That's the only real perspective that you can come at anything with.
So, if you recognize something, always there is something which exists, always interrelated with you. Okay, that is a cognition. Okay? In the realm of cognition, something exists. We can recognize, we can see that something exists. If you ignore this one, your understanding becomes philosophical, ontological, something like that. But nothing exists without the relationship with you. Okay? So all in the Buddhism we say all dharma is. So even though you don't see and Lebanon and tiny countries in the Europe, still it exists. All beings, all sentient beings. So those are connected with you. Okay? Without you cannot say all beings. Okay? That is a point in the Buddhism. So that's why we don't discuss anyway the one existence of one beings, you know, as ontological or philosophical. Always at a certain period of time we explain, but it's not final goal. Final goal is to understand one being in the relation with you.
That does seem unique to Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
because I think other religions don't refer to mind.
No.
You know, it's more absolute and ontological terms.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say that the limit of suffering is like being at the end of your tether?
Suffering?
The limit of suffering? Could you say that's like being at the end of your tether?
Well, temporarily I use it. Limits of suffering.
Yeah, sure.
Limits of suffering, well, end of rope is alright. But when I was, when my mother died, I was 14, I cried. All my day. All of a sudden, 180 degree turn. Something world becomes bright. Means the mother with me. I realize. But that is the final. At the end of the crying whole night. And then something happened. So I didn't feel sad. And so that means that limits of suffering, limits of crying, and sadness is not the sadness. It's frustration. So you don't know. So you experience something more than suffering or sadness. You understand what I mean? For instance, Zazen, maybe that, and maybe you, some of you experience, stay, you do continue to do Zazen with the pain. Sometimes pain is gone. Did you? I experience. For certain period of time, the pain is really awful. But if you overcome this one, pain is here, but pain doesn't bother you. So that is called no pain, no suffering itself, according to the sutra. So that means, anyway, that's why that teaching is really encouraging us, okay, to understand suffering or sadness and in a broad perspective. Don't accept suffering as simple suffering, right? Suffering is suffering. That's why you have to do something for it, because suffering is something more than suffering. Truth and the phenomena equal is still equal, yes, in a sense equal. It's not exactly equal. Maybe you may say so. It's not like exactly equal. If you say equal, A is A, something like this, but it's not A is A, it's different. They are different. So it's pretty hard to say. Phenomena. Because truth is I think the definition of the truth is explained next paragraph. It's very difficult to say, but finally what you can say is what it just is. You know, trees is trees. That's it. Truth is, I always say the vastness, vastness, oceans like this. And then in the vastness of existence, and then all sentient beings live there. Okay? So whatever you do, always you do in the realm of the vastness of existence. Just like a swimming in the oceans. Completely beyond you survive or you don't survive, or you say I want to sing or I don't want to sing. Completely beyond this, your life is always going. Okay. You have to sing. That practice tells you the vastness of existence and also cognition of your existence right in the middle of vastness of ocean. Okay. So what makes you understand the vastness of our existence and also each individual each individual, your life is right in the middle of vastness. So simultaneously, you live in the vastness. How to live? To swim beyond, survive or not survive, die or whatever. That practice is called just oneness. Okay? One mind, we say. Or the mind of all sentient beings. Okay? It's very difficult to say it is they are equal. No, not equal. But they are not different. They are working together, so they are not different, but they are not equal. Few minutes. You have a question?
If you understand or experience liberation, then you can help all sentient beings. I wondered if you don't understand or you don't experience liberation, you can help all sentient beings.
Well, if you don't understand the liberation, so you are already in the liberation. So you are already in the middle of a Buddha or vastness of existence, which is called liberation, alright? If so, why don't you do something? Liberation means, anyway, you have to live with the people, with all sentient beings, in peace and harmony. This is the liberation which you can experience practically. So, best of the weekend, we try to help, and then, very naturally, you can learn what the liberation is. Okay?
Thinking sometimes it seems, well, you have cautioned us about experiencing or tasting truth and mistaking that for whole truth.
Whole truth?
Yeah, you said, for example, the truth enters in, like nature enters into our cognition, and so we can understand it,
mm-hmm.
and it is nature,
mm-hmm.
or it is truth, but it's already particular,
mm-hmm.
it's individual. A lot of times you want us about individual truth. It seems to me that would be a pretty tricky it could be a real problem. A little bit of a problem. I'm reminded, for example, of, again, like you said, 60s in the Bay Area, San Francisco, and people would experiment with drugs, and they would get big insights. And many times they felt already qualified to teach everybody, but they understood, you know, there's teachers. They knew the whole truth. So I wonder how to be alert in that one.
That's why I mentioned, even though no matter how long, how often you experience that flashing of lightning through the nirvana or through that, and Anyway, you always the offer that experience to vastness of existence means any kind of experience must be melted away in the vastness. You know? And then at that time, it's very your experience becomes very deep, very deep. Well, for instance, I mentioned the other, the three type of lightness, okay? Three type of lightness, according to the Pasima. First, the stage of lightness is maturity is, you know, the fruit on the branch, right? The second is, the first lightness is maturity is and taking the getting the degrees of the, you know, of the university. Okay? That is a fruit on a branch. Next, the second maturity is to the pasima must become ripe, you know, become red. That means after your graduation, you have to forget your titles and anyway jump into a human society, share your life and with all such human beings. And that time you don't know what to do, you know, because lots of cases comes up. And then it is not mature yet. And through this, we will really experience third maturity is, anyway, pasima complete, which is completely ripe and fall down to the ground and all guts come out. That is called final, anyway, maturity. This is called liberation, okay. Freedom. You understand? That's why we say nirvana. That is real nirvana. All guts come out. So nothing to be arrogant, you know, nothing to attach to. No corners, no corner of your body, all very smooth. That is the egress.